This year, we welcome Jane Carrow to join us in celebrating International Women's Day. Jane Carrow is a Walkley Award-winning Australian columnist, author, novelist, broadcaster, advertising writer, documentary maker, feminist, and social commentator. And she's getting a bigger business card very soon. Jane has published 12 books, including three novels, Just a Girl, Just a Queen, and Just Flesh and Blood, a trilogy on Elizabeth Tudor, and a memoir, Plain Speaking Jane. She created and edited Unbreakable, which featured stories women writers had never told before, and was published just before the Harvey Weinstein revelations. Accidental Feminists, her book on the life story of women over 50, published by MUP, was launched last month. Now, Jane appears frequently on Q&A, The Drum, Sunrise and Weekend Sunrise. She has created and presented four documentary series for ABC Compass. And she and Catherine Fox present a popular podcast with Podcast One, Oz Stereo, Women with Clout. And she has regular columns in Sunday Life and Leadership Matters. I'm sure you've experienced Jane's wisdom and opinions in many different ways. So would you please join me now in welcoming her to the International Women's Day stage, Jane Carrow.
How I start every speech, tragically. It is a delight to be here and see all of you. How fantastic. Welcome to you all and happy, happy International Women's Day. What I want to talk to you about is really personal. I turned 62 in June. I know. It's an achievement. And what I think getting older does is it starts to make you take a long view. You start to look back at your own life and the times through which you have lived, and you start to put some things together as to why where you are now, where we all are now, may be the way that it is. And that is indeed what I have been doing. And there were two sort of nuggets of information that got me thinking. And the first one was one that I kind of worked out for myself. And that was that, excuse me, I've got a bit of a cold. I blame my granddaughter. The one was that my generation of women, women over 55, are a revolutionary generation. We are the first generation of women where the whole cohort have mostly earned their own money for most of their lives. Now, working class women and women who fell on hard times have always worked for money, there's no doubt about that. But prior to really the 60s, women who had to work for a living were pitied. When I went out into the workforce, it had become an aspiration. It had become something that was expected of us, that we were to go to work and contribute to the public sphere as well as to the private one. And I was feeling a bit smug about that, a bit self-satisfied, as if it was all me. I'd done it alone. I didn't really think that, but I had a sense of kind of triumph. And then I heard another statistic. And this set me back on my heels. Some of you may have heard it as well, that the fastest growing group amongst the homeless in Australia today are women over 55. And I thought, how can that be? How can the generation who have mostly worked for their own money for most of their lives, the first ever in the history of the world to have done that, also be the generation that seem to have found themselves at great risk of financial difficulty as they age and indeed of ending up living out of their car? How can those two things exist together? So because I'm the sort of person that I am, and I want to, I get a bee in my bonnet and I want to find out why has that happened? I started to look. And here is basically what I have discovered. When my generation grasped the opportunities given to us in education, because I'm one of those lucky people who got a free university education, thanks to Gough Whitlam. My apologies to all the young people in the room for whom that is not a reality. But that was hugely important for my generation. Prior to that, girls were often prevented from going on to higher education because families would say, well, we can only really afford to send, we can't send all the kids, and obviously we'll send the boys because they're going to go out there and earn money and you're just going to stay home and have kids. Because when I was growing up, that was the expectation of girls' lives, that our lives would not be very interesting. If they were interesting, it would be because we married an interesting man. Are there any? No, sorry. Of course there are. It's just you can't really tell how they're going to turn out when you marry them. So it was a high-risk strategy. But if you don't believe me about the attitude to women when I was a girl, I'm sure most people here are aware of the 7-Up series of films where Michael Apted, I mean, he must be in his 80s now, has been visiting the same 14 British children every 7 years since they were 7. The next film will be 63 Up. They're 1 year older than I am, so watching it, it's like watching my own life unfold. It's quite extraordinary. But what is really interesting about that and what it reveals, it was made in 1964, the first episode, what it reveals about attitudes to women then is the casting. 14 children, 10 boys, 4 girls. And that's because it was regarded, well, girls grow up, they get married, have children, and live happily ever after. I don't think it ever quite turned out like that, but that was the story. The thing is, though, when free university education came along, a lot of those women decided they did want to have more interesting lives, and they grabbed their opportunity, and they got educated. This was a great thing by and large, but it was a little tough on me because I went to university in 1975, and so did my mother. Not only did she go to a university, she went to the same university as me, did some of the same subjects as me, did a whole lot better than me. You know, sometimes women's liberation can go too far. But those women who grabbed those opportunities and went out into the workforce really paved the way for my generation to follow in their very brave footsteps. But the problem was the attitude towards women going to work, and that was very much a kind of, well, if you have to, I suppose it's okay, just so long as my dinner's on the table at 6 o'clock. This was said. I'm not making it up. What that indicates is that going out to work was seen as a bit of an indulgence, and that it was to be added on to all the work that women already did, which is the domestic load, obviously, but also all the caring responsibilities. And what that led to was my generation making a kind of what turned out to be a Faustian pact, which is we traded flexibility for financial security when we got old. We didn't know that's what we were doing at the time, but that's what we were doing. And we did it because we were taking the majority of the burden at home as well as trying to earn a living in the workplace. And those two things didn't fit very well together. There was endless headlines when I was first in the workforce, which were, "Can women have it all?" Greedy, greedy women wanting it all. Of course, what they meant by all was an interesting, fairly paid job and a family. Point of entry for men of my generation, not exactly considered a high aspiration. For us, it was all. And we were greedy. And actually, it was right. Some people said we can't have it all. We're just expected to do it all. Correct. And basically what happened is women went into the workforce when they left school. By the way, women and girls have outperformed men and boys in education for over 100 years. So if anyone throws merit at you, throw it right back at them and hit them right between the eyes with it hard. It's a nonsense argument. But women grabbed their education, they went out into the workforce for a while after they'd left school. Then they, as one of my interviewees, I interviewed about this for my book, said they met a spunk, got married and started having children. And then they went back into the workforce, if they could get back into the workforce part-time. Someone told me that they'd taken 10 years out to have their children, and when they tried to go back into the workforce, they were basically treated as if for 10 years they had done no work and nothing of any value at all. They had no work record because they'd been home minding their own children. She and her best friend then discovered that if they'd actually been minding one another's children, so if she'd minded her friend's children and her friend had minded hers, she would be considered to have a work history and that would have some value to employers. Are we crazy? Just a bit. So women went back into the workforce, and they went back part-time because they were looking after children, and they often had to go back into entry-level positions, and they often went back at lower pay and in lower skilled occupations so that they could have more flexible time to look after children. And then as their children grew, perhaps they thought they might ramp up their career if they could, but too often then parents got very old and they were expected to take that caring responsibility on too. And even if that didn't happen, just as women's children grow to a point where they can look after themselves, I thought it was about 11, some of my friends thought that was a bit extreme. I couldn't see why. But just when that started to happen and women had the experience, the education, the energy, the time, the confidence and everything else that goes with getting towards your late 40s and early 50s, guess what the workforce says to us? Oh, sorry, you're too old. Did you know that the average age of retirement, I use that in inverted commas advisedly because I think an awful lot of it is not voluntary, for women in Australia is 52. The pension doesn't kick in until 67. It's a long time. And as Penny pointed out, women retire on average with half the super of men and fully one-third of women retire with no super at all because of the way they've come in and out of the workforce, because of the kind of work they've done for flexibility reasons so that they can care as well as work. I often look at my working life and wonder just where that day was when I was the right age. Because prior to having children, the employers, if they went for a job interview, always asked you, they don't ask you now, but they still think it, when are you going to have children? Then, of course, I actually had children. Well, that was a pain for the employer. So nobody ever thought, actually, I'm bringing up all the taxpayers and consumers. Nobody cares? Okay. I'm not sure where you think you get them from, but anyway, without us. And then I had children then. Lo and behold, they grew up. I was too old. Where was that day? I wish I'd known because I completely missed it. Seems I was always the wrong age for the workforce as a woman. And the problem is that a lot of women who have found themselves edged out of the workforce in their 50s and their 60s. And we know that as you get older, particularly if you're a woman, but also if you're a man, you are much more at risk of losing your job because one of the intersectionalities we're not as good at recognising as we are of the intersectionalities between race and sexism and having a disability or LGBTQI or trans and all those intersectionalities is ageism. And yet it's very powerful, and particularly for women. And it's particularly unfair. What happens to a woman with little or no super who is let go, shall we say, from the workforce in her 50s and has to get herself to 67 before she gets the pension? Well, New Start's about $500 and something a fortnight. And last March, though I guess they'll be doing it now, Anglicare does a snapshot every year of affordable rental housing in Australia, all around Australia, for people living on Newstart or living on other forms of benefits. And last year in 2018, Anglicare found that in the whole of Australia there were precisely three, I repeat, three rental properties that were affordable for people living on Newstart. What is galling to me is that my generation of women, the girls who found themselves staring financial disaster in the face in their 50s and 60s, were not the mouthy, bolshy, rebellious, difficult, troublemaking, stirring feminist types like me. They were the good girls. They were the girls who tried to do what they were told, who tried to combine caring for others, which they were really told was the most important job of a woman, looking after the house, the second most important job for a woman. What fun. And earning a living. They tried to combine those things, and they worked very, very hard and very long to do so. And when someone needed care, they stepped up, be it a small child, be it someone with a disability, be it an aged parent or an aged in-law. They stepped up. And what's their reward? To face living out of their car when they're old. We have to change this. We have to change this. I know there are a lot of young women in the audience. I do not want to see another generation of women put in a situation where every time they step out of the workforce to care for others, they are made more vulnerable in their own old age. I do not want to see that happen. I think it is shocking, and I think it is an indictment. And I believe strongly we could fix it. There are lots of things we could do to fix it. The first thing we could do is equal pay. Either that or charge women 14% less for everything they purchase. Make up your mind. Actually, at the moment, probably charged about 25% more. Equal pay is really important. A less gendered workforce. Australia has one of the most gendered workforces in the world. 60% of us work in an industry which is dominated by one gender or the other. And this will shock you. The occupations that are dominated by men are better paid than the occupations that are dominated by women. I know, it came as a surprise to me too. Childcare in Australia is amongst the most expensive in the world. It is eye-wateringly expensive. It is outrageous that a lot of women with small children look at the idea of going back into the workforce and realise that not only will they not get any money left over from their pay if they do because of the childcare costs, they may actually be worse off if they go back to work because the childcare takes more than their pay, and it is therefore economically more sensible for them to stay out of the workforce for longer. And yet we know that that means it's really hard for them to go back. The longer they're out, the harder it is to get back in. We need to do something about the cost of childcare. Simple, we could do it. Lots of other countries have. We need to make caring not a woman's duty, but everybody's duty. Okay. There is all sorts of work that needs doing in our society, and all adults should do their fair share of it. That means earning a living. That means picking up after yourself in the house. And it means looking after small children, elderly parents, people with a disability. All adults should do it. And we need to set up workplaces to allow that to happen. Parental leave exists, but we all know that it is mostly women who take it. And men are stigmatised if they even try to. This is wrong and must change, because it results in women facing a financial disaster in old age. So it isn't just about justice or fairness, although those things matter. It's actually about real financial security for women throughout their lives. We can do other things too. Why? Here's a suggestion for all the politicians in the room. I don't care what flavour you are. Why don't we, whenever anyone, man or woman, takes time out of the paid workforce to care for others, why do we not continue their superannuation? Why we as the taxpayer should pay their super the whole time they are out of the workforce? At the moment, as someone told me on radio, I was astonished to find this out. A woman rang a radio program I was being interviewed on and said that when she was caring for her elderly mother, she tried to keep contributing to her super, and she was told that it was illegal for her to do so. What? Who set this up? I don't know. It could have been a bunch of men sitting around a table. Those things can all change. And here's my closing bit of good news and optimism. I believe they will. I believe they will. And I am seeing such hopeful changes. And I put it down to the Me Too movement. The Me Too movement is an extraordinary force for good. And it is not just about sexual harassment and sexual humiliation and sexual assault, although that is how it began, with millions and millions and millions of women telling the truth about their lives and making the scales fall from our eyes about what life is really like, particularly in workplaces for women. Maybe one reason why women hightail it to worst-paid female-dominated industries. Perhaps. But it has done more than that. It has done something really, really important. The Me Too movement, I believe, has raised the respect in which women as a gender are held by society. Because whenever you stand up for yourself, you gain respect. And I'm seeing it all over the place. That wonderful man who went to the Oscars in the tuxedo ball gown, I love him. You know why? Because previously, things that were identified with women, the clothing we wore, those kinds of things, were sneered at and seen as kind of emasculating and somehow dropping the status of a man if he should do it. He dressed up in drag to mock us, perhaps, but to actually do it proudly, unheard of. That's changed. I have a new hero, and I'll close on my new hero. 3 weeks ago in my local coffee shop in the lower north shore of Sydney, so it's not your groovy inner city place at all. It's very, you know, very conservative. It's Gladys Berejiklian's seat, in fact. Very conservative, very conventional. I walked into my local coffee shop to get a coffee, and there, standing in the queue, waiting for his coffee with everyone else, was a boy. I guess he was about 10 or 12 years old. He was smiling, he was confident, and he was resplendent in a sparkly green tutu. If this is symbolic of men not just putting on, sometimes if they feel like it, the dress we've usually associated with women, but also taking on the roles of working around the house, doing the domestic chores, cooking the meals, doing the laundry, getting up in the middle of the night to the baby, and also taking on the caring of small children, of elderly parents, of in-laws, of someone with a disability, of taking those roles half and half, 50-50, then I have great hopes, not just for the financial future of women, but for increased goodwill, lowered violence, more respect, and greater equality across this nation and hopefully everywhere else in the world. Me too, what a fantastic moment that was. I congratulate everyone who told their truth and continues to do so. Thank you very much for having me on this International Women's Day.